CliffCentral.com.
Good morning. It is Monday. It's the 9th of May. CliffCentral.com, and hopefully a good start to your week. It's going to be a 5-day week. It's going to be a real struggle for people. So we're so not used to this after 4 weeks of doing 4-day weeks. It's going to feel like a punishment straight from hell. All right, so up you get. Let's go. Let's start the day. We will be doing a lot of things this morning. We've got quite a lot on the menu. Among other things, we have Dr. Hanan Bushkin joining us in a short while for It's Gonna Be Okay, which is the best way to start a Monday, actually. You have your regular Monday morning appointment with a shrink. Am I on mute? Okay, there we go. Oh, why that wasn't working. Anyway, your regular Monday appointment with the shrink, that's Dr. Hanan at just about 6:45. And lots of cool stuff, including Collectomania, a little bit later on today. Very, very exciting. Good morning, everybody. And good morning, Leanne Moll.
Hello.
Hola.
Hola. I heard you were sick on Friday. What was it?
I actually think it's been COVID.
Oh, my God, did you get COVID? Have you had COVID?
Yeah, I got the vid. But I didn't get tested, so I'm not 100% sure. But, yeah, from what I'm picking up from all the symptoms, I think that's what it's been.
Well, apparently.
Anywho, made it out alive.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if I hadn't had that test, I wouldn't have known. And as long as you, I suppose it's like anything, you know, you hope to get over it quickly. But it seems to me that a lot of people who did get COVID, even if, you know, there are comparisons always made to the flu, a lot of people who got COVID took them a lot longer to get better.
Yeah.
Right.
So it takes a lot longer. And for me, the big thing has been being so tired. Just like you think you feel fine and then you just go to the shops to buy some, you know, something small, get into the car and you're exhausted.
Well, so, it's like those people. Yeah. It's like those people who are activists on social media. They're like, they're always so exhausted. I'm so tired. I'm so exhausted. Have you noticed those people? Like, I'm sick of having to explain to the male patriarchy. It just makes me so tired. It's like, I think they all have COVID. That's what I think is going on.
Yeah, anyway. It does. It feels a little bit pathetic when people say, "How are you doing? How are you feeling today?" And you're like, "I'm tired."
Yeah, and especially when it's Monday morning, first thing, and you're like, "Well, you surely did some resting over the weekend, you know." It's like I used to get into the lift. And you'd always find if you got into the lift on a Monday morning in a big building or whatever, there are lots of people working. There'd always be someone in the lift go, and you'd be like, "What's wrong?"
They're literally sucking the happiness out of the little bit of air in the lift.
Yeah, and they're like, "Oh no, it's just I'm so tired." And you're like, "But it's Monday. We haven't even started the week yet." You know? Anyway.
Yeah.
All right, so you're feeling a bit better now.
Mm-hmm. I'm still on the strepsils and the painkillers and things like that, but it's all good.
All right. A lot of people did get sick over the weekend. I was meant to see some people on Friday, and like two of them cancelled because they were not feeling well. Now, I don't know if it was any kind of normal flu or coronavirus or just, you know, it's the change of seasons too. So a lot of people are getting, you know, as soon as the temperature drops and people don't think about it, and you know, your mum used to say to you, "Put on something warm or you'll catch a cold." And that's exactly what people don't do. They don't dress warmly enough. I have to sort out my winter wardrobe. I don't think I've bought new winter clothes for, I don't want to exaggerate this, probably 4 years, maybe longer.
Well, we haven't really needed to, have we?
No, exactly. And I looked in my cupboard the other day. I'm like, geez, I have to wear that shirt again. You know,
when your undies start wearing a bit thin.
Yeah, I've got to go and buy like a jersey or something as well, just like a, you know, a warm top, because I've got hoodies. They're not very smart. You can't wear a hoodie outside of home. You know, you always feel a bit like a slob if you do. And yeah, just some smarter winter clothes. You know, maybe a nice jacket or something that I should get. But I mean, really, I've been surviving on clothes that I bought years ago, and it's fine. I mean, I don't need new stuff, but I just looked at it the other day and thought, ugh, kind of boring. You got to find something to.
Same threads.
Yeah, and you do look at it and go, I don't know about that. Again, yeah. Again. Anyway, we'll see how it goes. Anyway.
I want to know something, though. For men, is it still a thing to wear a hoodie and then a smart jacket over it with the hoodie sticking out?
I kind of get
because I was watching Bachelor the other day, as I do.
Yeah, you love that
the
show.
The American one. And he was wearing, he wears that out to like fancy restaurants, and all the women are in their sequin dresses.
No.
And it just looks a bit odd to me.
No, I've never liked the idea of a hoodie. And you know what you can do is you could put a jumper or a jersey under a jacket, but I don't like the idea of a hoodie. What do you do with a hood?
It was a thing at one stage.
No, I know, but I kind of think that maybe it's past, or am I being a purist?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. I just looked and thought.
I don't know. What do we know? Anyway, we had Gord and Ben on Friday, and it was a big hit. People loved it. And Gord is in London at the moment and having a very, very exciting time. He's traveling around Europe. And for the next couple of months, he's going to be doing that, and then he's going to come back with no money at all and try Cape Town again. That's his plan. I'll tell you what, I'm a little after two trips to Cape Town last week. I'm kind of a little burnt out of, and I know it doesn't. It's not a lot, but I don't need to travel anywhere for a little while, if you know what I mean. And because of the 2 years we've spent at home, it's like. A trip feels like a big thing again. I used to fly every weekend, you know, somewhere in the country. I'd be somewhere, and I never thought about it much. Now I'm like, I got a trip, I got a pack. Maybe I'm just becoming a pain in the ass, one of those old men who's like everything's an effort and everything's a big deal.
No, it's just all relative. I mean, I remember Etonians always complain about having to travel so far. And when I moved there, I thought, what do they mean? It's like a 20-minute drive. And here we do 40-minute drives easily in Joburg.
Yeah.
And then when I came back to Joburg, I thought, oh, my God, I've got to drive 20 Ks. And it's just it's all relative. You know,
no,
if you're
it is.
Just doing it every day.
Stupid.
Yeah. So don't worry. It's not because you're old and grumpy.
Okay, good. So a funny thing, like last night, for some reason, I went to sleep really early. I was pretty tired. And then woke up at 3:15 this morning, and I just decided it's not worth going back to sleep. So I lay in bed, but I had like the night sweats last night, which is so bizarre. I don't know if it was because it was just so cold outside compared to the last few nights, and it was warm in the bed, and maybe I just had too many blankets on. But I woke up and I was like, whoa, what the hell's happening here? I actually had to get out of bed. And, like, change my shirt. I was like, I'm not sleeping in that.
Oh, wow. That can be stress-related.
Like stress? I don't know. I'm less stressed now than I've ever been. If I think about it, if I compare it, like, I don't feel stressed. Do you think it is? What else could it be? It must be something else.
It could be menopause.
Oh, yeah, that's it. My vagina's drying up. That's what it is. I knew something was going on. That old vagina. I knew there was something happening down there. All right, well.
Listen, that actually happened to me the other night when.
What, your vagina dried up and what, camels came walking out? What happened?
It was during that when this happened. But woke up really hot in bed and I was kicking off the blankets and realized that my cleaner had very kindly put on the electric blanket that she had made the bed that day.
You didn't even
realize.
It was
on two. I was stressing.
Yeah, but I've said this before a million times. I'm very nervous about electric blankets. I've heard just maybe one or two stories, but they've stuck in my head. It's like they really traumatized me when people told me the story about these people who woke up and they're like their bed was on fire and, you know, they were literally in flames. And I don't know if it's even true. It might even just be a bullshit story, but it completely ruined my whole thing around electric blankets. I'm nervous as hell about them now. Anyway, a lot of people are asking about Joburg and Cape Town, which is interesting. It's a good comparison to make. But I do want to quickly comment on something that I think I brought it up last week. The Reserve Bank just turned 100, which means that our currency is 100. So we do collect a mania on a Monday, and I thought it would probably be relevant to point out – that the rant is also 100, isn't it? Or is the rant a rant's a little bit younger because we only started with the rant after we gave up the pont, right?
That's correct. So the rand actually started in the 1960s when it replaced the pont.
Yeah.
So, yes, 100th anniversary this year for the South African Reserve Bank, SARB.
Yes.
So the first notes came into circulation in 1922.
All right.
And before that, there was just no monetary authority in South Africa. It was the responsibility of commercial banks to bring notes into circulation.
Hmm.
So we did have money before that, obviously.
No, no. Yeah, people weren't, they weren't trading in stones and pearls.
Well, hopefully they weren't trading stones for pearls or the other way around. It began 100 years ago with Jan van Riebeeck setting a trading station for the Dutch East India Company.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually used Dutch guilder for our first currency.
Yeah.
And then we changed in when obviously there was colonialism.
Mm-hmm.
We started using the pound.
Right.
Then onto the rand, and we are old enough to remember our old 2 rand notes and
yep.
5 rand notes and things like that.
I don't remember. I must be honest with you. I don't remember the 2 rand note, but I do remember the 5 rand note. That was like a blue one, and
the blue one was the 2 rand. And
no
the
man,
5 was like a purple.
Bullshit! I'm gonna find you a picture now.
I'm looking at a picture right now.
Well, why don't you show your picture with us, dude? 5 rand note. You don't know how to do anything. Let me help. Oh God, you're right. The 5 rand was purple. Well, yes,
yeah.
5 rand.
Yeah.
Five rankies for you. Let me find a copy of this and just show everybody. Nothing worse than when people are talking about something and they can see it and you can't. And have you noticed now when people go out, they like their phones get passed around. They're like, ha, 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 look at this. We have completely lost the ability to talk. You know what I mean? Like without having to use our phones the whole time. A twee rand was blue. You're quite right. Wow. Look at that.
Mm.
Okay, and what was the 10?
And that was with Jan van Riebeeck and curly hair.
That's right.
In 2012, we went over to our Nelson Mandela notes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Madiba's on. You know, I think about that sometimes when I'm using actual cash, and I look through my wallet, and I'm like, wow, the president of the country's on there. That's pretty cool. You know. Because that's kind of how it works all over the world. So I know it's like an obvious thing to some people. But so here's the 2 rand. Let me just show you how that looked. The blue 2 rand, in case anybody's old enough to remember like Deanne and I. There we go. South Africanse Reserve Bank. 2 rand.
With Jan van Riebeeck and his curly hair.
Yeah, exactly. He looked like a lady who went to the salon the day before. I mean, I don't think I don't think his hair ever was really like if Jan van Riebeeck actually had hair like that, I'd be impressed. And here's the 5 rand, which was purple. 5 rand.
Yeah.
Look at that. Unbelievable. And it's signed by, in this case, Chris Stulz, who was the governor of the Reserve Bank. I remember Chris Stulz. Yeah, and then we changed to the Madiba money. And that's been around for how long?
But before we did, I had it. Sorry, I've actually lost it now.
Good thing this isn't a live radio show or anything.
It was 2012.
Okay, thanks.
It was 2012.
All right.
That was 28 years after his release from prison.
Okay. So that was what it was to commemorate.
And then remember, we've got the big 5 on the reverse side of those.
That's right. Let's see if you can get the right animal for the right note. So the 200 is a leopard, right?
Mm-hmm.
The 100 is a buffalo.
Buffalo?
50 is a lion.
That's correct.
20 is an elephant.
Yes.
And a 10 is a rhino. Am I right?
Nice. Perfect.
Yes. I'm so proud of myself. And then, of course, we've got the coins. Now, do you remember that big 1 rand coin?
Yes, it was It felt very valuable.
It felt valuable when it was. Are you joking? If you got R1 pocket money when I was at school, you pretty much owned the tuck shop. I mean, you could have anything you wanted. Like, you were rich. you were so rich. You could just walk up to the tuck shop counter and put down that R1 coin and you'd be like, I'll have all of it. Thank you.
8 Chelsea buttons.
No. I that's so funny. I mean, I don't think about the currency very much at all, but 100 rand, I mean, 100 years of the currency is quite cool. I mean, it just means that anybody, and you know, we've spoken about this with Rail from the South African Gold Coin Exchange. A lot of people keep, you know, money from 1925 or whatever, which would be the currency we're talking about now. And they think it's much, much more valuable, and it really isn't, because it's only as valuable as the amount on the note says. So if you have a 50 rand note from, let's say, 1930 something, it's still only worth 50 rand.
Mm.
Unfortunately, you have to wait a lot longer for it to be really, really valuable, and we'll all be dead by then. So keep it now, but keep it for your great grandchildren. You know, it's not going to suddenly appreciate in value to the tune of, you know, some incredible amount. And none of those notes were particularly rare, and none of the coins were particularly rare, and they continue to be in rapid and regular circulation. I mean, you can still find people who they'll dig around in some jar at home and they'll pull out like an old 1 rand. Here's something interesting. Apparently, according to Nico, they put the wrong rhino on the 10 rand. It was meant to be the black rhino, and they put the white rhino on. Ooh, okay, that's controversial. and Congo Chris wants to know, when we used a whole rand at the tuck shop, did we also ride the dinosaur to school back then? Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. I'm glad you know about it. The Diplodocus, I think, was my favorite dinosaur for transportation. How about you, Leanne? Did you like a Stegosaurus, or did you prefer a Triceratops?
Yes, it was. I used to alternate between the two. I was very lucky growing up.
Oh, you had both. Our old Brontosaurus, my poor daddy had to have to start it up with a bale huge bale of hay every morning. And it would take so long to get started. But we eventually got to school. It took about 10 steps because the thing was so fucking big. But we got there pretty quickly. So that 1 rand, says Woody, gets me 2 chappies now. That's terrible. That's all it's worth, huh? That's what you get. Mm-hmm. Robin says, if you found a 1 rand at home or in the car, it went straight to the tuck shop, followed by 3 friends. That's correct. Well, at least we know how you got your friends, Robin, buying them things at the tuck shop. That makes a lot of sense. Ruth says, remember arcade games? Oh, yeah. I mean, we used to, if you could find coins of a significant kind of monetary value, like we're talking 1 rand and above, you could use them at the arcade to play those games. But Ruth says they were 20 cents a game. I remember them being more expensive. I remember it cost quite a bit.
Well,
you'd have to cash in quite a lot of money.
I remember being dropped off in my very young teenage years at a shopping mall where we used to hang out.
Yeah.
And was given 20 rand, and that would be for movies, for popcorn, a slush puppy, Maltesers, maybe a snack afterwards, like a small burger or something.
Wow.
And a really good round at the arcade games.
It went a long way, in other words. Now we really do sound like old people. You know, my money used to last a lot longer when I was younger. And obviously with inflation at the moment. I have to say this because we talk to Revix, you know, every other day, or every other week at least, about what to do with cryptocurrencies. But I've noticed everyone, everywhere, nobody knows what to do with their money right now because everything is just not the greatest investment at the moment. Inflation has ruined the market. The U.S. stock market took a tumble last week. I see Bitcoin is at $33,000 this morning. Now, $33,800, in case you want the, you know, some closer approximation. But it's just like everywhere at the moment, your money is getting worth. It's becoming less and less valuable. By comparison with where it might have been a year or two ago. And that is a worry. That's a big worry for people. Cheryl says, I used to buy a pack of 30 a box. Hang on. I used to buy a pack of 30 a box of matches.
A pack of 30, a box of matches.
Oh, and a large top deck for 1 rand. Sure. 1 rant. That's unbelievable. Obi Kenobi says, I used to carry an old Ducks bag from Sunny Park, 20 cents a pop, played games with the earnings. That's very good. That's very good. That's good money. As a matter of interest, am I the only one who doesn't wear a watch anymore? I think we've talked about this before. I don't wear jewelry and I don't wear a watch. I've got one of those Apple watches. And I remember I got a watch when I was probably in my early 30s. A really nice sort of, you know, dress watch, which I hardly ever wear. And it sits in a like a little box in my bedroom. But I don't wear watches very much. I don't know. There are lots of people who love them. And there are lots of people who consider them a fashion accessory rather than an actual need to use, you know, for time. Because people use these for time now, the phone. I don't know when I last looked at a watch for. Even if I am wearing it, I still look at my phone to see what time it is.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. I've got a bit of a fancy watch in the drawer somewhere, but I don't really wear it.
Oh.
But again, it's also been at home, not wearing jewelry, so we're kind of not used to slapping on earrings and a watch before we go out.
Yeah, well, of course, I stopped at the earrings as well.
Oh, yeah, of course you did.
All right.
We're getting tangled in your long hair.
Yeah, exactly. So here's township slang for notes. 10 rand is a tiger, 20 rand chuck, 50 rand pinkies, 100 is a clipper, 200 is two clipper, and 1,000 is a stanna, meaning a brick. Because obviously you'd have, you know, a brick of hundreds, which would be 1,000.
Yeah.
Except I have to say again, you know, having seen like quite a lot of money in cash at the Reserve Bank once when I went on a tour of the Reserve Bank when Tito was still the governor, it's amazing how small a million rand in cash actually looks. Because you think a million rand, it's going to be like a big suitcase, you know, like a duffel bag full. But it's actually really not. It's not that much money when you look at it, especially if the notes are packed and tidied up and in an orderly sense. They're kind of with rubber bands or with little clips on them, so you can actually figure out how much is there. It's quite amazing how a million rand you could probably fit in, maybe even half a briefcase. I'm willing to say a briefcase.
Shoebox.
Maybe a shoebox. For a million rand. It's quite a lot, but I mean, when you look at it like that, you don't actually think, wow, this is a huge amount of money. And I mean, a million is a lot of, to earn a million rand, you have to work your backside off. So you think about how, if you work every day for years and years and years, you end up being able to, I don't know, you put the deposit down on a house or you buy a car or whatever, and you think about a million rand, it's a huge amount of money. It's a lot to work for. So there's a little nostalgia for you this morning while we look at the currency that turns 100. And then quickly, a couple of comments here. I wear my smartwatch only for exercising, says Woody. Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons people also like them. So time, although that's become less of a reason to wear a watch, fashion, and because they wear them for monitoring, you know, heart rate and steps and all of that stuff.
Mm.
People like that.
Also being alerted to SMSs and phone calls when you aren't next to your phone.
Yeah, absolutely. But then even that's kind of annoying. A lot of people who have smartwatches use them to give them messages, but then they think that they're not being as rude as if you're actually looking at your phone, but they're always looking at their watch like this, so it's just as bad. You know, especially in meetings and things.
He has an interesting comment. I actually read up on this as well.
Yeah.
Lewis Hamilton was asked to not wear jewelry because it's a safety concern.
Yeah. And so he wore three watches just to piss off the rule.
He said, next time I'll wear four. And he alluded to a piercing somewhere else on his body.
Ooh.
And we know he has earrings, but he alluded to some nose ring. Which he's not supposed to wear.
Oh, really?
And he alluded to some other piercing as well.
Maybe he has what do they call that thing? A Prince Albert. You think he has one of those?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Well, if he's got one of those, then he's a hell of a lot more exciting than I would have thought he was. Yeah, there was a big Formula One. I don't know anything about the Grand Prix, but I saw Miami was ablaze with excitement over the weekend, over the Formula One race there.
Yeah.
Mm. Steph wants to know.
Looks unbelievable.
Steph wants to know, is the Mint still on the highway between Joburg and Pretoria? I think they've actually moved, but they had this this really cool office, and they used to have like little, I think it was impalas, that were kind of running around right next to the highway. There was this fence, and then just on the other side of the fence were these impalas that were, they were just grazing the grass right next to the N1 highway. It was quite cool. I think the animals are still there, but I think the Mint's moved out. It's moved somewhere else. So that's the short answer to a very cool question. Yeah, if you've got anything to say this morning, drop us a comment in the comment section. You can also be a part of the show and tell us what you want to hear more of, what you want to hear less of, who you want to talk to. If you have guest ideas, if there's someone you want us to interview, let us know. We're always interested to hear what your ideas might be. So please give us a call or drop us a mail, contact@cliffcentral.com, or you can just join us in the comments every morning. Angus says, at first South African coins included the half-cent coin, 1 cent, 2.5 cent coin, 5 cent, 10 cent, 20 cent, 50 cent, and only the 1 rand, 2 rand, 10 rand, and 20 rand banknotes were issued. At the moment, our highest banknotes are 200, right? But in America, for example, they do have a $1,000 note.
Oh.
Yeah, you don't get them that often in circulation, but you do get a $1,000 note, so that's quite cool. All right, let's go to some other stuff that's in the news, and we'll get to some headlines in a moment or two. But apparently, there are 6 subjects that you should study at university if you want to be a millionaire. So we'll talk from money to how to make money, and these are the 6 subjects that you actually need to study. Apparently, these are the ones that people who've become very, very rich and successful have had among the subjects in their university degrees. I would say at this stage, don't go to university. Learn a skill and you'll end up richer than if you go to university.
Yeah, to stress, these subjects will help you become a millionaire, but
all right.
You still have to do the work.
You're not going to guarantee, sure, nothing will. Go for it. What are they?
So these are them, and this is in South Africa, by the way. The first one is law, so an LLB or LLM. The next one is finance and accounting, so you're looking at your BCom, your MBA.
Oh, so are you talking about degrees generally or subjects in particular? Because I thought this was subjects.
They're subjects.
No, well,
I suppose you would have to have law as your main subject to get a degree in law.
Okay,
but it's still a subject.
Well, yeah, all right. When you study law, you do different law subjects. That's why I'm confused.
Maths and stats.
Okay.
Yep. Hell, I did a year of statistics, so I'm not quite a millionaire yet.
All right, but you're almost there because obviously you're proof that all of these subjects are the ones that work, yeah?
Engineering, we have computers and IT, mm-hmm. and then obviously medicine and science. So for interest, your law subjects are at 30% on the chart. That's the chance of you becoming really wealthy. So that is the highest earner.
Right.
And then followed by finance and accounting, and then the rest are a lot smaller. For instance, your computer and IT are 7%. Medicine also only at 7%.
Yeah, well, it's so expensive to study these days that probably people end up paying off their university for more years than they actually earn. So you start off negative, and then you end up paying off those subjects at some point, paying off those degrees at some point, and then only do you start to accumulate wealth.
And then you also have here the universities in South Africa, which produce the the HNWIs, the high net worth individuals.
All right.
And they are in first place, UCT, second Wits, Rhodes, then Stellenbosch, UNISA, University of Pretoria, and then the US universities, which you can study through, Harvard, Yale, all of those are up next. UJ, which is my one, came in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 position.
No, you got no chance.
And then
UJ.
And then UJ
Sorry.
University after that.
Sorry. If you went to UJ, you're not going to be rich. Sorry. Hate to break it to you. So UCT is the best one, huh?
Yeah.
In terms of producing high net worth individuals. I don't know. I mean, I'm so turned off by universities at the moment. I just don't believe that they're real. I mean, obviously there's some things that you need to study at university, but there's so many crap things that they're teaching people at university right now. And honestly, it's very expensive, and it's become, I think for a lot of people, it's like they think university is going to magically allow them to find work and to make a success themselves. And that may have been the case once, but I think like the market is a little bit flooded at the moment. And if you consider in a country like South Africa, how many people are unemployed, university degree is absolutely one of the ways you can get yourself to the front of the queue, but it's not the only way. And there are probably more valuable things for us to be doing than studying our backsides off at university, sitting in classes all day while people in the rest of the world are actually getting real world experience, you know?
It's interesting too how one of the first things that parents traditionally turn to when wishing for their child's career is doctor. But if you look at the main industries in which HNWIs in South Africa acquired their wealth, healthcare is way down there. That's because it's just not as well paid here. But at the top are your financial and professional services, so your banks, law firms, and that sort of thing. Real estate coming in second, then technology, then basic materials, and then only healthcare.
Huh. Well, it's interesting. There's a very good article by John Kane Berman in the Daily Friend today, if you want to read that, about UCT and about how they're in a real bind at the moment because UCT's policies have become very unpopular. I mean, David Benatar has started to talk about, he's a professor and we've spoken to him before, he's an anti-natalist. He believes that it's wrong to bring people into the world. He says that that is an act of unkindness, of cruelty to bring a person into the world. But he's a fascinating man to talk to. And apparently, according to John Kane Berman, in today's climate, it takes courage for an academic to speak out publicly against his university's preferencing policies. That is what David Benatar has done in an article called The Fall of the University of Cape Town, Africa's Leading University in Decline. So Prof. Benatar describes in his book, which was published last year, the manufacture of a narrative at UCT that there is anti-black racist stuff going on. In reality, he argued there was much more evidence of an anti-white bias than of anti-black hostility. So an interesting thing that David Benatar is saying, they're really going out on a limb and talking about things that are quite unpopular. Let's see what happens. And an article that's just linked while we're talking about UCT to something I saw over the weekend. All right, a couple of headlines that we need to look at this morning. So first things first, concerns are growing as South Africa's COVID positivity rate nears record levels. Now, again, there may be lots and lots of people who are testing positive. And by the way, if you are testing, I've got to ask you why. Like, why bother? So if it's COVID, it's COVID. If it isn't, it isn't. The medication doesn't change. Whether you are vaccinated or not,
no,
that's up to you.
It's to be responsible so you don't end up going to visit your elderly grandparents while you're positive.
And would you do that with flu? You probably should.
Yes, actually.
Right, so you should do that with... So in other words, it's the same as flu, so just stay at home. Stay away from other people for a couple of days, and then you won't make other people sick. But apparently it's spreading like wildfire. The WHO, of course we know we can't trust them anymore, but they raised concerns around the growing number of COVID cases in South Africa. While this fifth wave of cases was largely expected, South Africans need to ensure that they are fully vaccinated. Now, I don't know why they keep going on about this. So I was vaccinated, I still got COVID, and I still got sick. And I know that people say,
but
you weren't hospitalized. And I go, yeah, but only 1% of people ever during COVID were hospitalized. So more than 1% of people took the vaccine. So I still don't see how much help it's been. Anyway, we know that a number of scientists predicted this would happen around this time, obviously with winter coming along. What is important, given the increasing numbers of infections, is for those who are not vaccinated to do so urgently. That's what the WHO are telling you what to do. They're telling you to go and get your vaccine.
Who?
The WHO. Who exactly? The WHO to go and get vaccinated. It's terribly important. It's not going to prevent you from getting COVID, but go and do it anyway, you know, for whatever reason. So, apparently, Nelson Mandela's grandson, Mbuso, has been granted bail. You remember he briefly appeared at the Alexandra Magistrates Court on Friday, He was arrested on Wednesday night following a police raid at his Morningside apartment in Johannesburg. He faces charges of possession of an unlicensed firearm and drugs. City Press reported, he was nabbed after the police received a tip-off from his landlord, who stopped the men in blue during a routine patrol in the neighborhood after complaints from other tenants. National Prosecuting Authority spokesperson Pindi Mjonondwane confirmed that Mandela was granted bail and would appear in court again next month. Sure.
Sounds very gangster. Weren't you friends with one of the grandchildren?
So I know Chief Zwelivilile. He used to be Mandla, but Zwelivilile Mandela. He lives in Kunu now, in the Transkei, and he's taken over like the job of being the chief of the family, and he's also probably the eldest grandson, I think, of Nelson Mandela through his son. Mbuso is his younger brother, and then there's Ndaba in the middle too. Ndaba was on the show probably about a year or two ago to tell us about a book he's written, Going to the Mountain, which is all about his conversations with his grandfather. So listen, like any family, there's some who are black sheep, let's call them that. Someone who strays from the path, and clearly that's what's going on with Mbuso here. Anyway, unlicensed firearm, drugs. I wonder how many people in Sandton, if they raided their houses, they'd also find drugs and unlicensed firearms. I wonder. Anyway, he's appeared in court. That's one of the stories. Oh, Leanne, we've just lost you. Your camera went into, oh no, something's wrong mode. Okay, so that's one thing. Another thing you need to know, Gwede Mantashe promised that those who do not support nuclear programs will be fired. Listen to this. Apparently, Energy and Mineral Resources Minister Gwede Mantashe says those who resist nuclear power while serving on the board of the National Nuclear Regulator will be fired. Now, he said, if you resist nuclear and you are a board member, I will fire you. Simple. You can't be on the board of something you're not advocating for. We want nuclear in Port Elizabeth, he told delegates. Mantashe delivered the opening address and spoke on a wide range of issues affecting the province of the Eastern Cape in particular. Mantashe took a swipe at the Eskom board and in particular Busisiwe Mavuso for her recent criticism of the ANC. Anyone who wants attention, he said, attacks the ANC. We put someone on a board at Eskom and they insult the ANC. Each time this person sits in a board meeting, they get paid and act like they don't have responsibility. Ooh, sounds like a little bit of, what would you call that? Sour grapes? Something like that? I mean, you know.
Yeah. what do you always say? A face like a ass or something.
No, Gwede, he's got that. He's got that terrible underbite. That's the problem with him. He's got this this thing where kind of the bottom jaw sticks out like that. If you've ever watched, that you get certain small dog breeds, and the bottom jaw kind of sticks out further than the top jaw, and then the teeth kind of come out.
Yeah,
that's kind of how Gwede looks.
Bulldog boxer.
Yeah. That's kind of Gwede.
And
that's
also Keira Knightley.
Keira Knightley. That's exactly right. She's a similar look to Gwede Mantashe. All right, so that's the latest from him. One other quick thing I want to tell you about in the headlines. This is quite incredible. A 542 million rand has been put aside to repair highways in South Africa. Apparently, this is particularly in KZN, where two of the country's most important roads were basically washed away. The repair work on the N2, which follows the coastline from Cape Town almost all the way to Mozambique, and the N3, which connects the economic hub of Johannesburg to the port city of Durban. Apparently, repairing those two highways, which we can't not do, right? That has to happen. Repairing those two highways is going to cost some 542 million rand, which is a hell of a lot of money. Fikile Mbalula said on Friday in a speech that the bill will be funded by the South African National Roads Agency and is probably only a fraction of what it will cost the country to recover from the widespread chaos that was caused in the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal by the floods. Deploying the army to assist in those regions is expected to cost 506 million rand, and that's before adding up repairs added to that bill for rail networks, housing, bridges, ports, and other minor roads. So if you live in KZN...
Is it just me, or do you kind of I hear these amounts and what they're going to be used for, but I don't really believe that it'll end up being used in the right places, the right people.
Well, who can blame you when, you know, all we see is like the government officials basically stealing money. It's very hard to know what happens to 542 million rand. I mean, we were saying just now how much a million rand is. You know, multiply that by 542. It's a lot of shoeboxes full of cash, you know? And if you think about these roads being repaired, I hope it does go to this very, very important need for infrastructure to be rebuilt in these places. Obviously, you know, we can't have Durban and Johannesburg disconnected. You can't have the N2 highway broken up in places because of this flooding. People have to get to and fro, and it's essential that we have these things working. So this is stuff I'm not going to argue about, but I hope there is especially good care taken by the people who are responsible for watching these things to make sure that it isn't just grift and there isn't a whole lot of gravy train stuff going on along the way. We'll have to see, though. Who knows, right? Who knows? No one really just believes the government, so I'm not too sure that everybody's going to be lining up to hand over their hard-earned cash money. Would you rather have sex with Keira Knightley or Gwede, says Carl? Well, I think that's kind of obvious, isn't it? I don't think it requires a huge amount of thought there, Carl. I'm not even going to answer that, dignified with a response. Show of hands, who thinks Mbusa Mandela will do time for his crimes? You know, like that 14 million rand student. Good point, Sanele. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. Why does deploying the army cost money, says Robert? Do they only get paid when they work? Good question. I do not know the answer, but that is a very good question, because otherwise, what are they doing the rest of the time? And don't we pay them when they're just sitting at the bases, which get broken into, according to a story from the news last week? Let's turn our attention now to Dr. Hanan, and this is one of my favorite things about a Monday. It's time for It's Going to Be Okay. Dr. Hanan Bushkin, who's a renowned psychologist, head of the Anxiety and Trauma Clinic in Johannesburg. So we wanted to talk to Dr. Hanan for a little while now about this Johnny Depp Amber Heard situation. And I'm sure if you saw anybody over the weekend, you spent time with friends or family or anybody, frankly, you would have had a discussion about Amber Heard and Johnny Depp. It's all anyone's talking about right now. So we wanted to ask him what he thinks is going on there, and also to look at the ingredients for a healthy relationship, because we can see from them that that is an unhealthy, unhappy relationship, deteriorated very, very badly. So, Dr. Hanan, nice to see you. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday, guys. Long time. The last time I saw you, I think we were T-shirts.
Yeah, exactly. It feels like it, because we've missed out on a couple of episodes with you because Mondays have been public holidays a couple of weeks. So, Doc,
right.
I kind of laid it out already that everybody's talking about this Amber Heard, Johnny Depp situation. It's so embarrassing, and, you know, I think about it, and I do think part of this is just because we're obsessed with celebrities, and we like watching an accident, you know. We like rubbernecking. We like seeing humans behaving so despicably towards each other, because it makes maybe the rest of us who are not doing that, even if we've got other problems and we're not perfect ourselves, makes us feel, oh, at least we're not as bad as Amber Heard and Johnny Depp. You know, her taking a shit in his bed, or, you know, the way they talk to each other, or the way that they both, or the way they're both acting for attention on TV. I mean, it's awful, right?
It's awful. A little bit of a confession. I knew we were talking about this today, so the first time I did a little bit of research was actually last night about 10 o'clock. I didn't spend a second on this, but I couldn't get off my screen between 10 o'clock and about 1 o'clock in the morning. It was actually unbelievable stuff that I saw.
Yes.
And it's not normal. It's absolutely abnormal. And I can tell as a psychologist, I see couples and they, in the confines of these four walls, they reveal pretty much anything and everything and their deepest secrets that they would not reveal to the real world. And the stuff that I've heard over the last 20 years, I would say even pales in comparison to what I saw on TV or in this trial, which is the relationship.
So just for context purposes, we're not weird for paying attention to this. It is very bizarre, and these two people do seem to have an enormous amount of malice for each other, and their relationship is clearly a disaster.
Clearly, it's incredibly abusive on both sides, and the one takeaway for me is that men can also be in abusive relationships, physically, emotionally, intellectually. So it went both ways. You know, the Me Too movement highlighted more maybe towards the woman's side, how women are being abused. But the truth is, it happens the other way around too. But that is a disaster of a relationship. There was no communication. Certainly there was no trust. Certainly there was incredible amount of physical and emotional and intellectual abuse, which obviously sometimes in relationships, two people are just not compatible.
Yeah.
You put two people that don't get along, or two people that just cannot. Obviously, these are smart and creative individuals, but they could not find a way for common ground, for common communication, to get to the same point. And I guess what would be valuable is for people to understand that there are specific ingredients for a healthy relationship. So specifically, there are seven things that people need to have that Depp and her did not have in their relationship. The first thing is communication. And maybe we'll break it down one at a time.
Okay.
But communication, there's trust, there's common and shared values, there's intimacy, there's attraction, there's compromise, there's a feeling of being desired, and there's agreement on who contributes practically to what. But the first two that I always advocate when I see couples, always, 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 this is always the starting point, is communication and compromise. So if I see couples that are not prepared to compromise, this is my way or the highway, this is my way or I don't want to be here, that is the proper definition of abuse. Because now you've got way too much leverage. Because now you're executing if you don't do this, then I'm walking, then you have to do this. And in a relationship, remember, there's no such thing as win-lose.
Yeah.
It's either you both win or you both lose. So I always tell couples, you know, when you negotiate, always try and leave the conversation with a balloon each. Because if you leave with two balloons and your partner leaves with none, then yeah, you win, well done, but the relationship loses. So there's always an element of compromise. Usually it's not 50-50, sometimes it's 80-20 the one side, sometimes 100-0 the other side, but there's always, and there should always be an element of compromise. So when I see couples in the first session, probably in the first 2 minutes,
yeah,
I ask them, are you willing to compromise? And if the answer is no, then I'm done. I've called it off many times with couples where I don't see them for a second session because they're not prepared to compromise. It's just a waste of their time. It's certainly a waste of their money. It's certainly a waste of my time. So just remember, there's always an element of compromise. And remember, we've said this on the show many times.
Yeah.
The difference between adults and children, one concept that has really helped me is that adults understand that the moment you commit to a position, you have to sacrifice something else. It comes with sacrifice. Commitment to a position, commitment to a goal, marrying a position comes with sacrifice. Children want it all. Adults understand that the moment I want to lose weight, I have to sacrifice the chocolate cake.
Yeah.
The moment I want to be married, I have to sacrifice being single. The one moment I want to live in South Africa, I have to sacrifice living or anywhere else.
Yeah.
Children want it all, but it doesn't work that way. You have to understand that whenever you commit to a position, whatever position you commit to as an adult, you have to let go of something else. Sometimes it's not the question of what do I gain, but which option do I lose less? And it is what it is.
So,
that's how life works.
So when you watch these people who are celebrities, who have had a huge amount of success, look, obviously they haven't been told no a lot in their lives. I mean, you can see with both Johnny Depp and Amber Heard, these are people who've been coddled. They're people who've got yes men around them the whole time. They probably think more like children than they do like adults because there's very little in the world they can't have, right? So they probably get used to just getting whatever they want. And then they end up in a relationship. They end up in a relationship together. And I think it's also valuable to say that as much as people seem to be willing to take sides on this, that Johnny Depp is no angel either. I mean, he abandoned his wife and children from a previous relationship to be with Amber Heard just because she's maybe really, really attractive and really sexy and really exciting and really different and really interesting. And then he regretted that almost the moment that it had begun, like a kid who will eat chocolate cake all day and then later on in life regret the fact that they have type 2 diabetes. You know, there seems to be quite a lot going on here that is illustrative, at very least, of the worst of human excesses when people live in this tremendously privileged universe that celebrities live in. And we're also enjoying it more because these are celebrities. These are people who we always think, oh, well, they're better than us. They're richer than us. They're better looking than us. They have these incredible lives. Everybody wants to do whatever they can for these people. And then when we see them deteriorate in front of us in a courtroom and we see how badly they behave when the doors are closed and the cameras are off, it makes us feel a little bit better. It's a bit of schadenfreude.
For sure. Now, I want to tell you something. Linking it to even being parents, one mistake that parents make, and one, let's start with the goal. The goal of one of the goal of parenting is to really train your kids for the real world. And a lot of parents don't allow their kids to fall and to trip and to feel disappointed and to feel hurt. And that's part and parcel of life. Those are the rules of life. You're going to fall and you're going to trip and you're going to get hurt and you're going to disappointed. And when you mollycoddle your kids, you don't actually train them for when that does happen. So when it does happen, they feel completely overwhelmed because they don't know what to do. Those are the rules of life.
Right.
And when it comes to celebrities, because they have a lot of power and a lot of money, which equates to power, they get a taste not of the real world, but rather a made-up world, a fantasy world, so to speak, because they can have what they want. They can have the chocolate cake and lose weight, so to speak. They can live in Cape Town and live in Joburg, so to speak. But the reality is that relationships have specific rules of life. There's specific rules of the game, and if you don't obey by the rules of the game, you fall. You know, there was the richest man in Japan. It was about 8 years ago. He went hiking and he climbed a mountain and he wanted to take a selfie and he took a step back and he slipped off the mountain and he fell like 30 meters. And guess what? He died. Because doesn't matter how much money you have, gravity doesn't care. There's still rules of nature. And in relationships, exactly the same. Doesn't matter how much money you have, how much power you have. The moment you break certain rules, the rules of relationships, if you break them, relationships break and fall apart. You got it here. You can't just because you're. Do you think your relationship cares that you're a celebrity? Do you think your relationship cares that you got all this money and power?
No,
it doesn't. If you aren't here to healthy communication, if you don't adhere to healthy compromise, if you don't adhere to healthy negotiation of values, then your relationship is going to fall apart. And these relationships, these so-called celebrity relationships, where they've learned that I can get away with pretty much anything, well, the relationships doesn't work that way.
There's a comment here from somebody. Johnny Depp has never claimed perfection, and his abusive childhood framed his response to this together with his substance abuse, which he never denied and has worked on. So I don't think he was using those as excuses, but those are obviously complicating factors, right? And we know that a lot of people who are tremendously successful, if they have demons in their background, if they have a bunch of skeletons in the cupboard, those are going to come out when you're not happy, when you're under pressure.
Yeah, look, your childhood definitely makes an impact on your mechanism and your patterns today. So naturally, just to give you an analogy, if I get bitten by a dog when I'm 6 years old really badly, I'm not going to just fear that Rottweiler that bit me. I'm going to fear all dogs later on in life. My patterns of avoidance, my pattern of engagement, my pattern of confrontation is going to be impacted by my childhood experiences. And the moment I have a negative experience, as in this example of the dog, is that my negative experience gets generalized, my fear gets generalized. So if a woman, God forbid, gets raped by John, the belief or the goggles that she's going to wear is not John is bad, it's going to be all men are bad. If I get bitten by a Rottweiler, it's not just that Rottweiler that's bad. It's all dogs that are bad. The fear and the avoidance becomes of everything. So sure, your childhood definitely affects your patterns. But remember, what was right for you when you were growing up, the rules that you learned and the patterns of engagement that were right for you when you grew up, doesn't mean that it's right for you 20 years later. So perhaps when I was 6 years old, I had a certain rule set. For example, don't cross the road without holding mom and dad's hand. That was completely appropriate when I'm 6 years old. At 42 years old, it's no longer appropriate. And if I hold on to those rules, well, I'm just going to be dysfunctional. So you remember, as an adult, you have a responsibility to adapt your patterns to what is appropriate for right in front of you.
So, Doc, one last thing, because this is where your professional expertise really comes to bear. I've seen a lot of people talking about the diagnosis that the psychologist gave for Amber Heard, that she has both borderline personality disorder and a histrionic personality disorder. Can you tell us what those are and how rare they are, how common they are, whether you think that you agree with that diagnosis?
Yeah, so the truth is, if you had to go through a psychiatric diagnostic book, which is actually this thing, we call it a DSM for short.
Yeah.
You have to go through the A's right through to the Z. You would look at the symptoms and something magical happens. You open it up and you go, oh my God, I think I've got this. And then you go to the next page and you go, I think I've got this too. And then you go to the next page. And then before you know it, you realize that you got bits and pieces of everything.
Yeah.
We could fit into many different things, but specifically for borderline personality disorder, BPD, or histrionic personality disorder, it's very rare. The personality disorders are very severe. They affect the way that you engage with yourself and the way that you engage with the world extremely. They're very severe. They're on the other side of the scale into the severity and extremity. And they're just dysfunctional. But one of these things about personality disorders is that they're very well hidden, because the person that has them generally is incredibly manipulative and can hide it. You would meet that person, I will see them in practice, and you would think, this is a very nice person. This is a very kind person. This is a very social person. This is somebody that I could go to a party with, that I could engage with. But behind the scenes, they're incredibly destructive, and they look for stability on a roller coaster as opposed to looking for a party on a lazy boat. So they internally, they just going through a hurricane and they search for stability, which can't happen, as opposed to be stable on the inside and look to enjoy life with that stability. So it's incredibly rare. It's not very common, but it's incredibly destructive.
And having seen them both during this trial, I mean, what are your takeaways? Not just in terms of the relationship stuff you've already told us, but in terms of what kind of people these are. I mean, are these regular, you know, run of the mill people? Is there a piece of those people in all of us, or are we better than them? I mean, this is what a lot of people are thinking.
Yeah, no. The truth is, I mean, it is extreme. If you look at the totality of the relationship, it's not normal. It's completely abnormal. But there are bits and pieces of us in them. You know, I saw at 1 o'clock in the morning, and there was a video of Amber Heard. She looks like she was doing cocaine during the trial while she was on the stand. Did you see that?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
It's an amazing video, and there's a part of us that goes, man, that's brave. That is brave. Oh, my God, I'd love to tap into that bravery. I might not like to do cocaine, but I'd love to tap into that bravery. So there's bits and pieces, almost like a fantasy. Like, I wish we had the bravery and the guts to do X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
But I'm sure we can pick up bits and pieces of things that not only we fantasize about, but things that we vile and we think that are completely inappropriate. But it's entertaining nonetheless.
Well, it's going to continue, and I'm sorry that we've dragged you into this now, because you had a perfectly happy life before we made you aware of Johnny Depp and Amber Heard, and we said to you, we'll talk about this, and now you've gone down the rabbit hole. So, you know, we're probably going to be talking about this for weeks now.
No, everyone. So now at least I can say I've seen it, I've watched it, but I'm not touching it again. It's just like one of those staircases that you can't get out of.
Well, that's also good advice, because we don't want to spend our whole time being voyeurs of other people's lives and not doing anything about our own, right? It's not going to make you better.
Absolutely.
All right, Doc.
Absolutely.
Thanks again. It's nice to talk about something that we can all watch on TV or can see on the internet. But next week we'll probably have some more real problems that real people are dealing with, not these celebrities. If you want to get hold of us, all you have to do is send us an email, contact@cliffcentral.com. You get a free session with Dr. Hanan Bushkin. And if you want to get him to help you through something that you're going through, and you can also be anonymous. You don't have to be out there with your name and everything else. You can let us know and we will put you in contact with him, and you can come and have your therapy session and maybe help a whole bunch of other people who are also going through the same thing. Leanne and I will be back in a moment or two. It is a Monday morning on cliffcentral.com. It is 7 o'clock. Don't you go anywhere. Stick around. A whole lot more to come. All right? Yes, good.
Cliffcentral.com.